Yo, I'm waiting on Mo. I'm waiting on Mo back. I said, I'm waiting on Mo. I'm waiting on Mo back. I said, I'm waiting on Mo. I said, he's talking to his mama.
AFI.
But what's up, mama?
Backstage stories.
All right, cheers to you, Mr. Moritz Batscheider.
Cheers, Jordan.
Clinky, clink. Mm. Oh man, have you thought like have you been drinking more or less the same amount of alcohol since this whole thing started?
I thought about this a few days ago because I thought like, yeah, I drink way less alcohol during quarantine because I can't go out with friends to bars and whatever. And you don't have those, and no partying. So you don't have, I don't know, a Saturday night party and get completely shit-faced. You don't have that anymore. But on the other hand,
that's a good point.
I guess I drank more casually, like, yeah, let's drink two beers here, fire up beer, you know, in the evening. Next evening, you're sitting on the terrace with your parents, and obviously there's some red wine. So I guess I drank more casually. So that's
kind of funny. Like quarantine has helped you be like a casual adult drinker.
You know, I've seen like, it all, you know, now, mate.
That's super funny. Because you kind of imagine when you go into shutdown that you're like, well, I guess I'm just going to drink three bottles of wine every night, or, you know, just get blasted on tequila or something. But actually, it's made you a more responsible drinker, sort of like a like a functional drinker. You're like, it's so weird. I'm not going out and blacking out and waking up in the grass. It's strange for me. I'm dealing with it though. I'm healing, you know.
I always have my underwear on when I wake up.
It's a new world. Everything's different now.
Oh, what dude. About you?
You know, the first 2 or 3 weeks that this whole thing started, I was drinking way more. When everything really shut down and I was stuck here in Munich before I went down to the mountains, but even there a little bit, I was drinking every single night, man. I was drinking not wasted. It was still semi-casual, but I was drinking every evening. I was like, okay, tonight I'm going to have 3 White Russians. And the next day it was like, I'm going to have 5 beers, or, you know, then I would have like what I'm drinking now, like just a good old fashioned college Jack and Coke, because I want a little caffeine with my alcohol tonight. And I was doing that a hell of a lot. And then when I went down to the mountains, I still drank a lot there, but I was like calming it back down. And then Efi was like, hey, you know, I just want to make you aware, you know, like no judgment. I'm just making you aware that you're drinking a lot right now. And oh, shit. Maybe, yeah, you know, and it's a different feeling when your partner mentions it to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's like, oh no, I'm disappointing everybody. She's like, when you go back to Munich, you know, maybe you could just take a little break, you know, keep an eye on it. And so, well, you know, and honestly, it worked out great that my plan was to come back here and take a break from drinking, because like I said in earlier shows, I had started right back at the school full time. So when you're working at a school, anyone listening who works in education at all totally understands that it doesn't go hand in hand unless you're some sort of like philosophy professor at a community college
or some kind of pro.
Dude, unless you're a professional. Yeah, but I'm not quite there. I have some years to train. I can maybe have a couple of drinks with dinner, but I mean, I'm on a normal school week, I'm exhausted by like, yeah, 10, you, by 10 p.m., you know?
That's why you're Joe Exhausted.
I'm Joe Exhausted and you're Scooter Mo. I love these nicknames. You know, if we started like a side musical project that was only electronic music.
Yeah.
I think that would have to be our pseudonyms.
Or 90s hip hop could also work. Scooter Mo sounds like a 90s name.
Dude, Scooter Mo, you'd have like kind of almost like what you have on now, like an oversized flannel open, but you, instead of this t-shirt, you'd have like a white, like a wife beater under it, and then a single gold chain, and then you'd look like one of those, you know, like mid-90s hip-hop guys looked like kind of... They you know, they had this look of like, look, I'm from a tough neighborhood, but I'm still educating myself. So they would always have these like thin round frame glasses. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You would be that guy. You're like, yeah, I'm Scooter Mo, and I'm reading the book on the down low. You know? And then I would be like the Biggie, like the Notorious B.I.G. version. Of Joe Exhausted.
Notorious B.I.G. who after he ran away from responsibility, I don't know.
yeah. I'd be drunk on the reg, that's for sure. I would have one of those gigantic I think little Lil Jon, I think he coined the whole pimp cup thing, or him or Lil Wayne, I think. Who was it? Was it Lil Wayne who coined like this pimp cup? They always had like their drink.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I think it was Lil Wayne, maybe, because
Have you ever witnessed Lil Wayne playing a guitar solo live?
No.
Oh my fucking God. It's a live show, a huge Lil Wayne live show. And at some point, within a sample, a roadie brings him a guitar, which is wireless connected to an amp, and Lil Wayne plays a guitar solo, and obviously he's super stoned, and it's complete bullshit. But the funny thing is the video of Lil Wayne playing the super shitty guitar solo has like 2.5 million views on YouTube, and then there's a tutorial how to Lil Wayne guitar solo. some funny guy made a how to play this guitar solo, and this video has 5 million clicks.
There's like this new style of musician video, like this. I know you've seen these videos. They're on YouTube and Instagram and TikTok. They're everywhere, and you know, it's only something that I think could have originated in today's technological age. But you know these trends where they play like a completely non-musical clip, like for example, they play a clip of this podcast, or they play a viral video of someone talking to a news camera about something tragic in their town, or a clip from a TV show, and it's a drummer who plays a beat to the vocal pattern of the person talking. Have you seen these? Dude.
Yeah.
God. Like the ones they do, my favorite one ever, there's this guy, if you have to see this one, it's, I love this show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And there's a famous episode where Charlie Day is working in the mail room of an office building, in the style of like those late 80s Wall Street movies. And he gets into his head that there's a conspiracy within the company that this certain, I can't believe I'm forgetting the name, because Pepe Sanchez or something like this, some like really good name. Doesn't exist. Like all this mail comes for Pepe, but Pepe doesn't exist in his head, you know? So he's like in the room and he has all these, like red strings attaching like key points. Like, okay, here's this mail, but on this Saturday there's this. And like, you know, he has this whole like conspiracy board built up and he's tired. His eyes are all black and he's smoking cigarettes like crazy. And his friend comes to check on him and he just riffs like this very, very long monologue about the whole conspiracy. And dude, this drummer just nails it. And it makes it so musical and so interesting. And I had just never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, there's super crazy shit going on. But there's one topic I want to get back to. You've fallen for TikTok. How is it? How addicted are you already?
Oh, man. Dude, I have to admit, I dipped my toes into the murky waters of TikTok a few times over the past couple of years, and I always found the depth of this water a bit too deep for me, because I'm not a great swimmer.
You're a simple swimmer.
And I'm a simple swimmer at heart, my friend. And it kind of freaked me out. I thought maybe I mean, obviously I am too old for TikTok. I'm highly aware of that. But
this disclaimer, I don't know why
this
long.
Year. Yeah, it's fair. It's interesting as fuck, dude. It's so entertaining. And I think because of quarantine, I just had more time on my hands and I just got distracted more easily. And man, I'm looking at TikTok every single day.
I believe that. And I have one idea. When at some point your album will drop, and maybe next year or whenever we'll play shows again, I want to have a TikTok account for that and do...
Just for the live shows.
You know? And you... When I think about the car rides we have, the time backstage or free time in the afternoon in some certain city we have never been before, you could create so much great content.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, there's always so many great jokes and great bits that happen on the road, man. There's so many great moments and like... little quips or like just hilarious. I mean, that's how we came up with the whole thing about Mark Boysen. We could have done a whole TikTok trend about the fact that he disappears.
that's the first thing that came to my mind, because, and this is not meant in any disrespectful way, but Mark could be the perfect.
Of course. I mean, he's my drummer.
I love him too. But Mark could be the perfect TikTok star.
Dude, he would be a perfect case study for some sort of TikTok trend. Like, you know, there's so many little trends that people repeat and build their own personality on. And some of them are so random and so strange. And you just think, how is this a thing? And yet what they're doing is entertaining. And maybe even just the fact that he always disappears when we go to a new city. I just want to shortly tell the story about when we went to Brighton. So It's been a year. It's March last year. Jesus Christ, dude. Time feels so weird right now. So March last year, or May. No, it was May. What the fuck? It was May. So in May 2019, I got booked to play the Great Escape Festival in Brighton in the UK. And I brought Mo here with me on bass and our buddy Mark, of course, who's been my drummer since I've lived here. And we three went, and it was like an amazing trip, you know, like two great live performances. We had day tickets. We saw all these great artists like Joshua Burnside and
Louis Capaldi.
We fell in love with them. And I think you saw Louis Capaldi. Oh, no, he's a huge star, right? He's like a famous guy. I don't know him so well, but yeah, we saw lots of great shit and it was really a lot of fun. And Mark had this habit, which he always does no matter where we go, where, you know, he can't make like a decision on something that he wants to do. Like, I remember like the first day that we got there, we were starving. So we went down the street to this, I saw this diner and it looked like it had pretty nice looking sandwiches. It had good coffee. It had like some teas and stuff. So like a mild amount of variety, and it looked good. And it was right in front of us.
It was raining.
And
we had to go inside somewhere.
It was raining. Exactly. Right. Yeah, it was raining. And we thought, okay, this sucks. We're hungry. Here's a diner. Let's go inside. And I don't know if you remember it this way, but I remember standing in front of it. I looked at you and I was like, hey, this looks pretty good. Do you want to go inside? And instantly you were like, yeah, sounds good to me. And then we looked at Mark and it was like, hey, Mark, what do you think? Everything, like, is this cool? Dude, in the classic Mark Boysen response is a furrowed brow, pushing your lips a little bit away from your face and going, you know, nodding from side to side like you're trying to get water out of your ear. And I was like, well, do you have another idea? Do you see something down this street that you'd like to go to? You know, we're game for anything. No, but. And finally, I think, I don't know if one of us just made the executive decision, but it was like, I'm going in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but now.
So we went in there. Yeah.
Yeah, go on. Sorry.
Oh yeah, yeah, but like that's his other like main habit is this, like, he doesn't really make a decision, and we have to make it for him, and then usually he's fine anyway. And even inside, but even inside the diner, you know, we go in and like you and I go up to the menu and it's like, cool, I'll have this sandwich and a cup of coffee. Thanks, great, pay, sit down. We're eating our food. And this means that time has passed enough for us to have ordered, to have sat down.
Like 20 minutes.
Dude, at least. And we're getting through our food. I'm on like the last chomps of this sandwich. And then Mark Boyson decides like, oh, I guess I will order something. It's like, now? Okay. But yeah, he does this all the time. He's, you know, I love Mark. He's a very talented drummer and a really good friend, but he always swims against the stream. You know, he's just
one of a kind.
He's his own. He's one of a kind. They broke the mold when they made Mark Boyson. And the perfect reason why he would be a good TikTok trend, I think, or something, a humor like this maybe, is just that we nicked on this trip, I think it was this trip, we nicknamed him Ghost because I think, I don't know, it was a 3-day trip and probably 7 times, Mark would just wander into a different direction than the one that we were walking to. And he would just not tell us where he was going. And then at some point, we would just not know where he was for a large amount of time. Do you remember there was like a couple of shows? Like he just went one time. Okay, one time we made it really clear. It was like, okay, everyone do what they want to do. We're going to meet at this place at 7 or something. And then that was fine. But there was other times. There was like so many times where we were just walking together and like maybe even looking at a performance or something or getting a snack at a food truck. And then Mark Boyson we would just turn around and he just wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we would look around for him. We tried calling him. And I remember one time I found him by accident, you know? It's so crazy. But yeah, just this random disappearing thing.
And it's crazy. Now imagine we would... all of the plot that you just told within the last few minutes, we would have that on tape and cut it hard together like jump cut style, like a modern TikTok style. His reactions and the moments he disappears. TikTok gold.
Oh man, do you know anybody like this guy from your personal life other than him?
No, not really.
You know, I have to say the only other person who reminds me a little bit of him is somebody who, if they heard this, would laugh really hard because they consider themselves the polar opposite of Mark Boyson. It's my friend Vivi, because in 2016, I did a tour.
She's been on the show already, by the way, for...
Oh, that's right.
For people who want to get to know her.
That's right. That's right. I'm sorry, Vivi. I forgot we had you many moons ago on the show, one of our earlier guests. Listen to the episode. She's extremely talented, very funny, one of my very best friends. And I would say she's a little bit like Mark in a certain way, which is the fact that they get very easily distracted. They swim against the stream. They do their own, you know, they're one of a kind of, and they can't really make a decision. The only difference being that Mark floats around forever until you tell him you're going to do this, and Vivi can't really make a decision, but she's down for anything. You know, like if you say, what do you want to do? She'll say, I don't know, and she'll say, I don't know for hours. But if you suggest one thing specifically, like, do you want to go there? Then she's like, yeah, sure, of course. You know, there's no hesitation, but in 2016, before I had any management or anything here in Germany, I did my first tour here. It was all self-booked, and I played a bunch of small open mic bars and cafes, and I think it was like...
I have the tour poster right here next to me.
The sophomore year tour, right?
Yes, sir.
I loved that tour. It was a lot of fun, and... the majority of those shows, like, I think we played 15 times, you know, like, I think we played 3 times in Berlin and once in Leipzig and Dresden and Munich. And we went to Innsbruck And it was a lot of fun. Vivi drove her van from Madrid here. It was like a 21-hour drive. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. And the most memorable chunk of that was when Mark Boyson joined us for a few concerts, because we were playing like a trio for a few gigs in Berlin. And we stayed at a friend's house there. There's like this 68-year-old man who's a very successful architect in Berlin. His name is Carlos. I think you know Carlos, huh? Carlos Zwick? Yeah. So
yes, not personally so well, but yeah.
Yeah, so he's another, I mean, you could do your own podcast about this guy. He's super, super crazy and interesting and lovely. And he let us stay at his house. So we three were staying there for these shows that we were doing together. And man, there's this beautiful, like priceless inside joke. And I'll try to explain it without rambling too much. But basically, like once, a single time, Vivi smoked weed with us on that trip. Mark never did it. He never did it at all with us. He was kind of being like the father, you know, like he knew that we were excited to be there. He knew that we were going to drink and party and trying to meet a lot of people. And you know, Mark, he's distant. He does his own thing a little bit. And he's older. He's got like almost 20 years on me. And he was just being like this responsible, overwatching kind of guy. And there was a few shows where, you know, he didn't want her to drive. And not, she hadn't even drank anything, you know, but he was just like, I'll drive. Don't worry about it. I'll do it. And you could tell that he just felt more safe if he was taking the lead and being like this fatherly thing. Anyway, one time, Vivi and I smoked weed. Just once. And ever since then, Mark Boyson, like, refers to this behavior of Vivi as classic Vivi. And she only did it one time. Once. So now, you know, and we ate this up. Like, me and Vivi thought this was the funniest thing to make fun of him for, because he thought it was like this, oh, classic Vivi. Like, and he, you know, like you put the, like the little weed symbol up to your lips with your finger and your thumb, like, oh, classic Vivi. Ooh, get a little stoned, huh? Get a little smoky, smoky. Once. And ever since then, whenever Vivi and I call on the phone or something, there's always a moment where there's some sort of joke. And she always remembers that she was called classic Vivi. So whenever she makes me laugh on something, then she always tags it with like, classic Vivi. And it's so good, man. It's really, I love that. I love that. That was a great tour. That was a lot of fun to see all these cities. And that was my first real experience doing anything like in Leipzig or Dresden or Berlin or anything.
Getting around Germany.
Yeah. She drove this van from Madrid to Munich. And then we played like 14 or 15 shows. And then we ended back in Munich and we played this... actually, it was, I think, one of my earliest, I think it was my second performance ever at the Miller Club. And Peter Patzmandi, who is one of the founders of Hauskonzerte, was actually mixing that night. And the sound was awesome, dude. And her parents came in, her parents had driven into town, and her brother was there, and they filmed it all. And
from Madrid?
Yeah, man. They were doing like their own, they had like holiday. So they were driving around, I think they were going somewhere for holiday anyway. And then they just ended up meeting us in Munich, and they ended up spending like a week with us. They stayed in the hotel next door to us in Munich, and they went to this concert, and it was a lot of fun. I love her family. They're really sweet people, really genuine, like good, smart, kind people. It was really nice.
Nice. Sounds like a pretty cool trip.
But yeah, dude, I mean, TikTok has really become my whole life right now. Other than
back to deep.
Yeah. other than, here's something I wanted to talk about. I got this, I told you about it. This is why we didn't do the podcast yesterday, but I got this crazy offer that I think can really only exist again, like can really only exist today. Something I've never had offered to me ever, which is that, so me and Mo and Mark were supposed to play a festival at the end of this month, near Mosul, Zell. Is that right? I don't remember. Anyway.
Somewhere in Baden-Württemberg.
That's it. And of course, you know, since February or March or something, it was rescheduled for next year because of Corona. And my booking guy sent me a message just a couple of days ago, and he said, the guys who run this festival, they want to book you again next year, but they're trying to still keep most of the artists that they had booked this year on a live, like internet performance sort of thing. And which is normal. Sometimes you have people who, you know, want you to do like a house concert. You film like, you know, you do your, like two or three songs or something, and they put it on Instagram or whatever. And it's just a nice, like, a nice gesture of like, hey, wish we could play with you. Here's a nice little song. Hope you're having a nice evening. Stay safe. But they said, hey, why don't you record an entire show, like a 35-minute slot or something, and we'll still pay you. I mean, things are going to get...
And even book you for next year.
And they... This is... Well, that's on the table, is that they're supposedly going to book us for next year. I hope they do. I mean, they haven't confirmed anything, but I hope they do. But
super, super sweet deal.
It's crazy, man. Like, it really... I saw the message, and I think what just blows me away the most is that they even have this as an offer, because I have to think... Maybe they get like a large amount of money from the government or from sponsors or something. Like, otherwise they're just really losing a lot of money on this. I mean, do you know, since you work in media, do you know how stuff like this works?
Not really.
Or, I mean, I don't know.
obviously not really regarding such events.
Okay. I didn't know if maybe you'd interviewed some people maybe in the past who handle this sort of thing, but it's crazy.
No, only artists. Okay. I only interviewed artists how they survived the crisis, but not actually no event guys.
Okay,
whatever.
So you only ever interviewed like the drunks like me.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of drunks, I remember this time you told me that the German or no, they're Austrian, right? Wanda or they're German?
Wanda, they're Austrian.
Wanda. I told a friend a few nights ago that I like that the name or the band Wanda, like Wanda. When a German says Wanda, I imagine that they're speaking English and they're saying that they wonder about something.
I wonder.
I wonder what's for Mittagessen.
But I wonder when I can have my Feierabend beer.
But you guys prepared at the station, right? Because Wanda is like they're also like some drinkers, huh?
Yes, but they were when I interviewed them, they were so friggin' hungover that they only wanted water. So one colleague of mine thought like, "Oh yeah, Wanda's coming. Maybe she'll get over to the supermarket real quick and get a variety of drinks for them," and bought like Prosecco, wine, beer, whatever. And then they came.
Oh, wow.
And they came up with the elevator, and the guitar player gets out of the elevator and has to sit down because he's exhausted. And he said, okay, those guys are super hungover, super fucked up. We interviewed them on a couch in the studio, and the guitar player is sitting laid back like this. And there were moments within this interview where I thought, fuck, he fell asleep.
Really?
We can't ask him any more questions because he fell asleep. He nearly fell asleep, but he worked his way through somehow.
Man, that's the, you know, I like to drink, I like to party, and I love when there's an opportunity to be interviewed about my music. It's a very selfish thing that I actually really enjoy. But I mean, there's a line to draw at some point where it's like, come on, man, get your shit together. I mean, even Keith Richards, he's still alive. You know, he keeps his shit together, you know? Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's... I can't judge it. I can't judge it too much, though. I mean, of course... I mean, they're rock stars, and it's like, it's almost like, I don't know, what do you say?
A rare thing today.
Yeah, it's like a rare... Yeah, kind of. I mean, all the rock stars today are either, I don't know, a lot of them today are like vegan, gluten-free, highly liberal, gentle, I don't know. They don't have this same kind of raw, natural kind of coolness to them that they had.
Do you have a band or an artist in mind?
Well, okay, like, I don't know if
for
the person I'm going to describe is exactly these terms, like exactly if they're, you know, I mean, there's, and you know, to be fair, there's nothing wrong with someone wanting to be vegan or needing to be vegan or wanting to be gluten-free or needing to be gluten-free. What I mean by these terms is like someone who's just, you know, I'm using these terms as a way of saying that they're not as like rough and chill and cool and like flowing with it. And like, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's cool to show up hungover for an interview. I mean, that's something that I just said. I hope that I would be able to pull off, but I just mean that, you know, they don't come off as, I don't know. You just think about, for example, some person who I think keeps this
Give me a band.
Kind of rock star energy going, even though they're probably a humongous asshole, is, hold on, Alex Turner from Arctic Monkeys. I saw him do, I mean, then again, he could be all of these things, but the persona, I mean, you know, it's not about what they do in their personal life. It's about the persona. And Alex Turner, both of our favorite, songwriters, you know, I saw him do, maybe you've seen it too. KEXP Seattle. Do you know this? Yeah, super.
Yeah.
I know super the famous. If you haven't seen it, every artist you've ever loved is on there. If you have any like good taste, I mean, these guys are like, there's only great bands on their YouTube channel and on their station, and it's a like kind of a dream of mine to get on KEXP one day, or you know, Tiny Desk or whatever. It's in the vein of like Tiny Desk in a way, and Alex Turner was promoting, I think, the album Suck It and See. And he came on, you know, not as Alex Turner, but as kind of like, I'm Arctic Monkeys, you know, like he was Alex Turner, but he was just playing alone. And he had this crazy, you know, could have been very lame leather jacket on, but it wasn't lame. It was kind of badass.
Could have. What do you mean? Like,
could have been, I'm sorry. Could you lame? Picture me wearing a leather jacket? That would be super lame. I would not pull that. I would not pull that off. I am.
I doubt it. I think you could.
I am. I am a bowl jacket. Of mayonnaise that has been morphed into a functional organism. Like, I cannot pull off leather jackets and
a
like,
functional drinker.
I'm a functional drinker that's basically like baby powder in human form. And Alex Turner shows up. He's got like some stubble on his chin. He's got this great, like, thick black hair that he's just like kind of shoved back behind his ear. And he's got this leather jacket on. And it's just this attitude, man. Like, he even goes as far in this, really, again, can only be pulled off by people with this, like, this touch. But he's there with like these Ray-Ban sunglasses on, and they're kind of hanging off his nose, and he plays these songs, and I mean, they're gorgeous. He does like these really stripped down acoustic versions of these really, you know, heavier rock songs. And the interview is, you know, probably is probably not the easiest person to interview. I think he kind of came off almost a little too cool for school. But still, this vibe of like, dude, that guy's a, he's gonna be a fucking legend forever, and he knows it. He knows it. He's already won multiple Grammys.
Yeah,
that's it. You know, it's like, I've made it. You know, I've made it, and I'm always gonna kind of have this. This thing about me, you know, and he's not the only one. And it also doesn't have to be exactly this way. You don't have to wear fucking leather jackets and shit. Like, I just mean this vibe, you know, he pulled it off and it's like, that's a rock star. He, maybe he was hungover. Maybe he was not, but he just had it. And I think I'm trying to think of an artist today that has good music, but doesn't give me that. A band today that has that vibe but does not give me that feeling is maybe the guys from the band Whitney, or maybe Rex Orange County. You know what I mean? Like, kind of like today's. I mean, if you exclude, you know, the majority top 40 pop Billboard sort of style of person or whatever. Like Rex Orange County is extremely successful now since 2 years or so. And, you know, he's someone I would love to hang out with. He looks like really sweet and really cool and really intelligent. And, you know, it's definitely in my wheelhouse of personality types that I think is a cool guy, but he's not this old style rock star type. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
You know, like, I'm by no means shitting on either of these people, but there's just for me like a visual difference. And I think Rex Orange County or the guys from Whitney, or I don't know, maybe some of the guys from Wolfpack or something, like, you know, No. I'll take that back. Wolfpack, those guys are rock stars. They're nerdy, but they're so fucking cool. You know, and the interviews and shit and like how they do their social media. You know, they pull it off. They just pull it off, you know? And like, I can't imagine someone like Rex Orange County in the same scenario as Alex Turner, where he shows up like looking a little bit like lame and how tough they're trying to come off and it working. Yeah, Alex Turner, like, if he was a softer dude, he would look like he's trying too hard. He would look like he has this like small dick energy, but he doesn't. It like really works for him, and you're like, oh fuck, man, this guy's such a badass. have you ever heard that term before?
No, and I wanted to ask you about one other term you used at the very beginning.
Uh-huh.
By wife beaters, did you mean those kind of tank tops?
Yeah.
Because I've never heard the term wife beater. That's rough. And I've never heard small dick energy. Sorry, Jordan.
No.
But regarding your...
I forget that people don't know, like a white sleeveless, you know, tank top. We call it a wife beater.
Fair. But regarding your point, that's also the whole kind of rockstar attitude and the kind of a special, unique vibe around an artist or a band is what I'm often missing with bands and artists, and obviously songs I listen because somebody shows me them, and I kind of like the music, but I don't stick to it because the artist, I know, doesn't speak to me in a way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not getting attached by some kind of attitude, or there's no fascination growing or whatever. And the band where I totally have this, and it's a big part why I like them so much, is Cage the Elephant. Because they celebrate this kind of 60s Stones rock and roll attitude, rockstar attitude, but in pretty artistic ways. Have you ever seen the videos? They work together with different super edgy filmmakers and building artists, etc. Whatever, and but still the leather jacket rockstar attitude. but in a very subtle way.
I haven't seen their videos, but I'm trying to like kind of get their image in my head. I think I know what you're saying about that. Yeah, I don't know. The thing is too about bands like this and bands like Arctic Monkeys are different and the same in a kind of way. And then there's this like funny gray zone with bands that fall into this sort of glam rock vibe. If you think about the old like the old players like Bowie and Freddie Mercury, they fall a bit into this theatrical glam rock world, and they were definitely vibing more of a feminine persona from time to time, but it still had this like kind of raw, like, I don't know, like sick. And we say sick as in like cool, like just had this rock star, you know, just like a legend was happening here. Something legendary was happening there. And I get that same vibe from The Killers. I haven't listened to The Killers in a long time. I don't know what their new stuff sounds like, and maybe it's different now, but you know, when, what's the album? I listened to it so much. Have you listened often to The Killers?
Yeah, but not that many album in their eternity, to quote Billie Eilish, by the way. Only few hits or a few songs I found somewhere along.
Yeah, I mean, they have, you know, a few songs that are like really heavier, thicker, distorted guitar, and then they have other songs that are more based in synth. And I love watching their live shows on YouTube because they fall in that world of like, they are total rock stars. And they have this attitude and they have that persona. And, you know, the guitar player and the bass player and the drummer, they're kind of doing what you expect or what you want to see from a rock star thing. And then Brandon Flowers in the middle goes in and out of masculinity and femininity. And for me, that kind of accentuates this essence of what glam rock can be and what it maybe even should be, which is like blending how you feel in a way. And at the end, you're still admiring them as a rock star. And I think, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of bands today who do it that I just don't know, but I think they're one of the last bands from my curve of, you know, finding new things where they fit into the pocket of that so perfectly.
Yeah. But to make my point clear with this kind of attitude that makes that builds a fascination around a band or an artist. It's like, because I said there are many, many songs and artists where I'm missing this. And you could say basically most of what we know, I don't know, what any indie pop albums from 2013 to now, which stick to kind of an 80s vibe, and maybe some more electric parts, etc. And I'm hating this fake 80s vibe. I don't want to be the old guy who says like, oh, they don't play real music anymore these days, but they're just picking up elements from another time, and are replaying them over and over and over. And bands like Cage the Elephant pick up a vibe from another era, but take this as a base, but create something completely new out of it, using those elements and living this whole attitude all the way through. You could picture this in fashion. So like many bands, I am missing this vibe. You could say I do not, it's not the same if a hipster in, I don't know, in Air Force One sneakers plays rock music from the 70s. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It simply doesn't match in some way. And bands that are really fascinating are those who are living it through. I was like, Oasis, sorry to get back to them once again. No, but the music they're playing and the vibe they build up is basically mostly 70s blues rock music and giving it a kind of British raw touch, and that's it. But it worked in the 2000s.
Yeah, you know, you see a band who you can see a band's inspirations, and then you can see the talent that they bring to it and where they take it, and they take it somewhere fresh. And that makes a good songwriter. And I completely agree with you about this whole 80s thing being like beaten into the ground. I don't know when or why or how this style blew up, like in the last, like you said, maybe even the last 10 years or so through now. And I feel like when I hear a song that has this, I don't know, this tone or this sets up this 80s world, maybe they're guys who are just obsessed with getting these old style Moog synthesizers, or they have this like chorus flanger effect on the guitar. But you know, if they just have the effects and they just have the sound of the 80s, but they don't bring something new to the table to define themselves as unique artists, then man, I get so bored of it so quickly, and I just skip these tracks over and over and over, and I feel like it's really wasting, or it's kind of crowding the small gap that artists have anyway of getting through to a new audience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But that's totally the point.
Yeah. Yeah, if it sells, I mean, it's like the Avengers thing. It's just like, if it sells, then let's just keep making more and like blow up the industry with it.
Yeah, and there are many artists with, I experienced to like 2 to 3 songs of them, but there's too much replaying the stuff their influences have already done 30 years before, and too less bringing own talents in. And it's a band like, you know the band Greta Van Fleet?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're always called the new Led Zeppelin. Yeah, and they are crazy musicians, but they got this label, and when I listen to it, for me, this label is totally true, because yeah, they're the new Led Zeppelin, but not more, not less.
But it's also, I think this is a good example. I think Greta Van Fleet, whatever, it's this boring thing. It's this boring thing that happens a lot right now, which is like, you see a band that has an enormous amount of talent, but they don't bring something fresh to the table. I mean, Greta Van Fleet, they might as well just be covering Led Zeppelin songs. Just, they sound a lot like them, but it doesn't mean that they're special or different or unique. They're just a really, really good, young, good-looking cover band. You know? And like, for me, when I was in high school, the band that was called the new Led Zeppelin was fucking Wolfmother. And when I first heard the song Woman by Wolfmother, I was like, whoa, this guy is totally ripping off Robert Plant's singing style. But then I listened to the album and I was like, holy shit, these songs are super cool and really well produced. And like Love Train and Joker and the Thief. And I mean, these tracks, they rip and they're different. You know, they fit into that genre. You can see their inspirations, but they're bringing something new. And that's why they have a place in the rock and roll history for that first album. And dude, I saw them live and they kicked ass. And that's what you need. Like, you know, you need to be something that's familiar enough for people not to be afraid of it, but also different enough to where they think you're your own thing.
Yeah, quick Wolfmother fun fact. And Apple Tree was the song that brought Jordan and me together.
Which song? Oh, yeah. Apple Tree.
Apple Tree.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. 2015, we covered that.
Yeah.
At a festival together. Yeah, it was the first thing we played. That was really cool. Hey, let me just take a quick pee-pee and fill my drink. I'll be right back. We'll be right back.
found.
Oh man, but that's a really interesting topic to get into. Like, what makes like original music so fucking difficult to make? What, like, or how can it not even hard to make, but what makes it accessible to new people? You know, like, how can you make a song that people can listen to and like they have to say, well, this sounds like Ed Sheeran, and oh, that sounds a little bit like Fleet Foxes. I like what he's doing there. You know, you have to appeal to here's the thing. I think nowadays you either want to try to appeal to this like perfect vocal, perfect production, pop world, which, you know, since working with children, just literally becomes background noise. You know, you have this like repeating rhythm with like almost like grind your teeth, boring lyrics. There's so many songs that these kids request that I hear all the time, every day. And it's the same shit over and over. Normally it has like an, or whatever, over and over, like 100 times in the song. And the kids, you know, it stays in their ear. It's an earworm. And usually the text is so generic and repetitive. And it's another inside joke between me and Vivi. But basically the whole thing is like, all of these songs are about tonight. Only tonight. It's about us and you and me tonight forever. Because there's only tonight. The stars look on us because tonight. Tonight. It's the same shit.
When did you say?
When did what? I missed a good joke. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
tonight, man. Tonight. And then, you know, the other, that's the one industry you're kind of fighting to get into. It's like, okay, maybe I'll be famous for a year, make some bags, make some money, and take it and, you know, fade back into anonymity or animosity, whatever. And then the other side of it is, do you want to be something fresh, original, unique, creative, and like astounding in your own way? And man, so much competition for both. And there's just a small pocket for both to be able to try and do anything, you know?
But the struggle starts even earlier from a musician's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
For example, and I've never have written that much original music and whatever, but maybe like 15 songs or whatever, or 20. But the struggle starts when you try to write a song, and no matter if you do it on purpose or if you just jam out and it turns out that you're getting somewhere. But the struggle starts because obviously you start with something you know, because you've heard it somewhere else, or you were just taught, okay, these chords work together or whatever. And from there, get to a point where it's not just playing someone else already does successfully, but filling little gaps with your own talent, like you said, and bringing in your own touch and create something new. That's where the struggle starts as an artist, I guess. And for me, I wrote songs, but at some point when I was 18 or 19, because I started pretty early, I realized like, okay, this is not my thing. Because when I have an idea and I start to write a song, I always question myself, okay, is this cool? Is this something new? Or is it just something everybody has already heard of? and that's why I am now at a point, and that's first of all because I don't feel the need to go somewhere with me playing music. So it's just a hobby, and it's a great hobby being around with you, playing shows with you. I would not like to miss a second of that, but I close the door to the part of writing my own music. I like to.
You think you did like forever, that you closed the door forever?
I guess. I'm not sure.
I guess that's hard to say, right?
That's hard to say, but I definitely stopped stop pushing in this direction and trying over and over again.
Right.
You know, it happens often that I get a little lick or some chords together or a little melody or something and try to do something with it. I send you the stuff I played and recorded during quarantine.
Yeah, I was going to say, you put a clip you put a clip of your funky quarantine song in here a couple
and
weeks ago.
That's still fun for me, but I do not try to push and write songs.
And yeah, I mean, it's hard because I think with music, you never really have to make this. I think the biggest line that you probably have to draw, the hardest line to draw as a musician is not the line of, do I want to only focus on being a studio musician, or do I want to focus on, being a songwriter where I can play shows under my own name? Or do I want to focus on being like a live musician who gets booked for tours or something? I think those lines are hard, especially if you're torn between them. Sometimes I get more money, you know, singing for other musicians or writing texts for other musicians who do something else than I do from my own record sales or streams or concerts or something sometimes. And, you know, that line gets played around in my head of where I should maybe focus my interest more. But I think the hardest line in my experience for a musician to draw is, how long can I make this the most important thing in my life? You know, like what I mean by that is.
And I believe that's tough.
Yeah. I've played on that line. Very realistically, maybe 4 or 5 times where it was like, should I stop? Should I really just go ahead and stop trying to make a career with my name and my songs and, promoting myself the way I do and fishing around for new listeners the way that I do and trying to get like tours and stuff.
But how often do you think about this, or how much are you dealing with these thoughts?
Well, that really depends. It depends because I'd say when I'm recording something, then I'm completely rejuvenated and I can only obsess with this new music. I can only plan and focus and design and think and stuff and prepare myself for when I have the opportunity to release it and how and when and through what channels and who's going to like it and how can I fix it and whatever. And I get really, really jazzed up about it. And when I'm doing the release, like in May of 2018, when I released the 12 songs record and we did this, we actually didn't do a tour, which I felt really was a mistake on the booking guy's fault. And we, that's not the point, but like when I released the record and we did this big concert in Munich and stuff, that's another like, hit of gas to the car. Like, oh shit, this feels so right. This feels so right. I really need to, keep this momentum going and like do everything I can think of and like brainstorm new ideas of spreading the content and like getting new ears. But then there's,
yeah, because you're confronted with so many things.
Exactly. But then, as every musician will know, there are these huge gaps between releases and between recordings where, you know, maybe you're not making so much money. Maybe you feel that there's not that many listeners. Maybe you don't get as much feedback or comments or whatever. Or like maybe there's a few months where you really don't get any new followers on any sort of platform, and the streaming numbers aren't jumping up like as much as you thought or something. And those chunks happen every year. I mean, there's always a huge gap of months where things are just stagnant. And either you've done a good enough job and had just enough luck that the preparation before this gap was successful and the numbers are where you like them and it's okay for you to leave them steady and you can focus on other things and be comfortable that this is brewing in the background, or you feel that you failed, the preparation wasn't as good as it could have been, the numbers are not where you want them to be, the money is not what you wanted it to be, which is more often the case. And then you have to wonder, is this a legitimate goal that I can have in my life? Or do I need to stop living this fantasy that I'll actually make a career as a musician and digest that information now and make a new living for myself so that I don't end up like one of those really embittered guys in a black band t-shirt at a bar at 40 something talking shit about all the music that he's listening to today because he never gave up his dream, but he never made it. You know, like one of my biggest fears is to end up, and you know, and everyone knows a guy like this, like just some guy at a bar who watches a bunch of concerts, who obviously wanted to make it and maybe even had like a record deal or something for a little while and just didn't crack the code in a way and lives a bitter life where he feels his dream never came to reality. And I think every musician who takes themselves really seriously and wants to make it their career has these gaps where it's unfortunately based a lot on numbers and data and of course money. And yeah, you know, like the new record is, the whole record probably is dropping early, maybe like January next year, but there's a couple of singles coming out this year. So, you know, since we recorded it, I've only been thinking and planning about, you know, how it could be released and looking forward to these dates that were booked. And you know what, now that it's like booked and there's a label and stuff, I can get excited again. And this will fuel me from now, I know, until maybe next March. From now until maybe next March, I'm going to have a nice cooking, boiling energy, you know, under the surface about everything I should be doing and planning and preparing and asking for advice and reaching out and stuff. And then in March of next year, you know, everything will be done. Everything will be out. And that will be another turning point for me where I have to decide, did I do everything I could? Did I get lucky enough? And are the numbers better than they were by the time that we released this episode? You know, like, was it better than last year? And if it's not, then I'm definitely going to have that conversation again with myself. I know it. I'm going to be sitting in my bed at 11 p.m. at night or midnight, not really able to sleep, wondering if I need to stop this nonsense and go back to school. For sure. I have it every couple of years, for sure.
Dude, that's been a really, really deep and honest take.
It's true. But it's just totally true.
But super nice and super interesting for me to dig into your thoughts with you. Believe that, but this I have thought about it when you talked about the example being the bitter old guy who hasn't made it watching other young artists play.
Yeah.
This whole mood has so perfectly been captured by the Coen brothers. The whole film Inside Llewyn Davis, one of my favorite movies of all time, captures this feeling.
He lives my biggest nightmare.
Being the musician who having not quite made it, but had some highs, had some lows, and being a bitter guy.
Yeah. And you know, he's gonna live the rest of his days thinking that he was better than the ones who made it, and that the ones who turned him down were the wrong ones. You know, and the shitty thing is, for us, the audience, his songs were gorgeous, beautiful, original, handcrafted songs with a great singing voice and great finger picking. And, you know, if I had that record label in that scene, like there's a scene, I guess, like halfway through or a little more where he performs it for the record label guy and he turns him down. I mean, if I had been that guy, I would have signed him. I would have given him a chance. You know, who knows where he would have turned out, but it's so, the thing is like, I kind of hate that movie because it's so realistic and so scary. It's like how some people can't watch slasher films because they don't want to be afraid of the dark. I can't watch Inside Llewyn Davis because it reminds me of like the reality of this of this goal and how realistic it is that could be after this release or not, that I could be slapped with the fact that there's not, just not enough people interested, and I can't, especially if I start having a family or something, I can't spend as much time as I do on it now if it doesn't make me any more money than it does now. And the only good thing about where I'm at now is that, you know, like I said earlier, this other softer line to draw about where a musician will go is like, you know, this line of giving up isn't there, but the softer line of where I want to be in music is there. And if I can just stay in that bubble, then I'll be okay. You know, if I don't make it under the name Jordan Prince, and I don't make it selling my own songs that I'm singing, then the good news is I do have this pocket where I've made money writing text or singing for composers who are putting songs into, you know, television and film, or, you know, I could have a lot of enjoyment if I bettered my craft, if I bettered my voice and I bettered my guitar playing and did some session work for other musicians who have a better string of luck and talent than I do, and playing for someone else's material. I can get a lot of joy out of that. And honestly, if I can just be in a studio somehow and not starve doing it, then I can be really happy. I don't have to be on the road. And thankfully, that's something I came to the conclusion of in the last 18 months or so. And that took me 29 years to get there.
But it's for me, it's a pretty wise point of view to the to your craft and to your artistry, etc.
I mean, I would say it's a better outlook on it than I had when I was 22, or yeah, maybe even 26 or 27. I think that sort of reality, that, you know, like swallowing the reality is the hardest thing, that it just might not work, and that's okay. The thing is, my goal is just to not be that bitter guy. And if I can make money somehow in a studio somehow, or on the road somehow, then I can be happy. Then I can do it.
And then it doesn't. By the way, this is a very, very desperate call to all studio owners out there listening.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
No, just joking, but I believe that.
Like, hire me, and please.
No, but I guess that's a cool attitude of yours, and one that doesn't put you too much under pressure and hasn't that much potential of frustration.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like the hardest part is finding the finding that acceptance that, like, how can I not do exactly what my dream is and still not be regretful, not be resentful, and not judge myself that maybe I did something wrong, you know, because the easiest thing to do is to say that I didn't do enough. And honestly, in film and in television and in media and in music, it's always the same. Yes, you have to work your fucking ass off and be good, but you also have to be extremely lucky, man. I think that's probably where I have to stop today, my friend.
Cool for me.
All right, buddy.
Cool for me. I also have stuff to do some cooking.
My man. All right. Well, as always, for those who enjoyed today's show, please go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this show, and please give us a good review, a good rating, or a comment. It really helps shows like this reach new listeners who were searching for something to listen to during quarantine right now. And even just telling a friend, just word of mouth goes a long way for small shows like this. So thank you so much for listening. And Mo, as always, buddy, I really appreciate your time.
Bye-bye. It's been an absolute pleasure. Have a great week, guys. Look out, baby. The Saints are. All over now, baby blue.
Artsy-Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.